I would imagine that all of you recognize this location in the photo. Standing in the parking lot, looking south toward the ridge there. This was taken last fall, kind of catching the changing of the colors there a little bit early before they really changed colors. But so you recognize that. You know where this is. Now, if you know who these three guys are fishing in our parking lot, I will say you're wrong. This is a bad example of me attempting to Photoshop pictures off the internet onto a picture that I took. But it's the point here is that this silly picture is silly of three guys fishing in a parking lot. Yet that's our lesson this evening from 2 Peter chapter 2, because this is a great illustration of the silliness of following false teachers, which is just like fishing in a parking lot. And this is from 2 Peter 2, verse 17, and also Jude, verses 12 and 13. I want to read the verses and talk about some things there and use this to introduce some things. Let's read the passages, and then we'll talk about what get into the lesson. Verse 17 of 2 Peter chapter 2. These are springs, talking about false teachers. These are springs without water and mists driven by a storm, for whom the black darkness has been reserved. Then turn a few pages over in your Bible to Jude. It only has one chapter, verses 12 and 13. Describing false teachers also. These are men who are hidden reefs in your love feasts, when they feast with you without care, caring for themselves. Clouds without water, carried along by winds. Autumn trees without fruit, doubly dead, uprooted. Wild waves of the sea, casting up their own shame like foam, wandering stars, for whom the black darkness has been reserved forever. Now, the picture is silly, and the illustration is somewhat silly, but the point is not, because as we talked about last Sunday night, the destiny, the ultimate end for false teachers and those who follow them is, as it said here in Jude, black darkness. Eternity away from God. And so what we want to do tonight is we're just going to look at these illustrations here in 2 Peter 2 and in Jude, and then we're going to talk about the primary problem. There's a single problem that all of those things represent that is the main problem with false teachers. And then we're going to turn to Ecclesiastes for a deeper analysis of why following false teachers is basically like trying to fish in a parking lot. Well, the first illustration that we're going to see here is from 2 Peter chapter 2, where he says that it's springs without water. In verse 17, these are springs without water. So false teachers are considered to be springs without water. Now, most of you older folks, people my age and up, can probably remember times when you're out in the woods or out on a farm and you knew where there was a spring and you went to get something to drink and it was dry. And you were left without anything. And so the idea there is you went there thirsty, wanting something, expecting to get water, and you get nothing. And so what he's saying here is that when you're talking about false teachers, you listen to these people. They may be teaching something. They may sound good. But as you listen to them, expecting to get something out of them, you find out that you're getting nothing. Now, for you young folks who've never been on a farm or never walked through the woods and drank out of a spring, think of it being on the playground at school. You're out there, you're running around, you get hot, and you're sweaty, and you want to go in and you want to hit the water fountain for something to drink, and you get there and you push the button, and nothing comes out. You ever done that? Anybody? That's one of the most frustrating things in the world. You're thirsty, and nothing comes out. That's how he's describing false teachers. There's nothing there. We think that there's going to be something great, something good, and there is just nothing there of any value. Well, the second illustration is also here in verse 17 of 2 Peter 2, and that is the idea of mists driven by a storm. Jude 12 calls them clouds without water carried along by winds. You know, this summer has been kind of wet. There was a dry period earlier in the summer, but for the most part, we've had plenty of rain. But every once in a while, when things will get really dry and we'll go 2 or 3 or 4 weeks and there's no real rain, and all of a sudden they'll say, you know, a rain chance, and you see it on the news or you see it on your weather app, and then rain chance. And so you're looking for the rain, and then you're looking at the radar. And this is my biggest mistake. I look at the radar, and you got this big red cloud in about 4 hours, because they just play it out over as it's going to develop. In about 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, there's just going to be this big red rain cloud right over my house that's dry. The yard's dry. Dust is everywhere. By the way, if you mow the yard when it's dusty, it will ruin your lawnmower. I learned by that by experience. But anyway, so you're waiting for that rain to come. And then you check it about 2 hours later, and the cloud's gotten smaller. And then when it's supposed to hit, you look and there's clouds everywhere, but not over your house. And you pull up the weather app, and all of a sudden it's split around your house. In Bowling Green, they call that the Bowling Green bubble. And Rob was telling me the other day about the Dry Ridge bubble up there where they live. They live on a road called Dry Ridge because it's on a ridge and it's dry, and the storms will split and go around them. But again, the principle here, the idea that Peter and Jude are communicating is the idea of expecting something good and getting nothing. Absolutely nothing. It just comes through and leaves you wanting. Well, let's go to Jude and verse 12 for the next illustration, which is a little bit different, a little odd, something that kind of reads different depending on what version you read from. And that's the idea of rocks in your love feast. And there's a whole set of discussion we could get into about what is a love feast, and we'll leave that alone. What I want us to notice here is the idea of they're getting together for a meal, and all of a sudden these false teachers are like rocks in the food. Verse 12, he said, "These are the men who are hidden reefs in your love feast." And that's the New American Standard Version, 1995 version, says reefs. Some of yours may say rocks. I think King James may say spots. The idea there is of something unpleasant and unexpected in the food. You ever eaten a salad and it's gritty, maybe got a little sand on it or something, and it didn't get washed properly or something like that? Or anything that you've eaten that's got grit or sand in it, not grits. Grits are nasty anyway, but you get grit in it, and it just grinds on your teeth and it's irritating, and it just makes it unpleasant. What he's saying is that these false teachers are like that. But they're worse than just sand in there. They're like a rock, and you go to take a bite of something good to eat, and you crack a tooth. There's maybe an olive pit or something, or just something in there that you bite, and you break a tooth. Again, so the idea is there. You go expecting something good, and you get something that's unexpected, unpleasant, and destructive. That's how he's describing these false teachers. The next idea here is of autumn trees without fruit. So false teachers are like autumn trees without fruit. He continues there in verse 12. They are clouds without water, carried along by winds. We talked about that earlier. Autumn trees without fruit, doubly dead, uprooted. That's the idea. If you got a tree out in your yard, maybe it's a peach tree or a pear tree or something growing here that you're looking for fruit at the end of the year. And when you go out, maybe it's out in a field somewhere, and you go out there and you get there, the leaves have fallen off, there's no fruit on it, and the tree's dead. Again, you go expecting something good and you get nothing. Nothing of value. That's the illustration. That's the point that he's making. The next one here in verse 13 is wild waves of the sea casting up their own shame like foam. And the idea there is of the false teachers are like the waves of the sea. If you've ever been to the beach, or maybe out on one of these lakes around here where the water's high and the wind's blowing, a storm's coming, and that water's really moving a lot. And what happens is those waves throw junk up on the beach, on the shore. Especially after, you know, you got heavy rains and the water rises, the rivers fill up and the lake rises, and then they go back down and there's all this junk that they've left on the side. That's what false teachers do. That's how he's describing them. Instead of producing something that you want, all they leave behind them is garbage, foam, filth, and debris. That's how he's describing false teachers. They don't give us what we want, and they just give us garbage. And then the last one here in verse 13 is wandering stars. And wandering stars are really the word planet. Because if anybody follows the stars and you look at the stars and you go out and you know where the North Star is and you can find the Little Dipper and the Big Dipper and all that other stuff and the various, if you're really into those things, you know where they are because you know where they're going to be. Planets, and when you live in a society that is determines its directions from the stars, they need to know how to get some from one place to the other. They need to be able to see the stars at night and see the ones that are fixed and set, and they know I can go follow this one. It'll take me where I'm wanting to go. A wandering star is a planet, our planets. They wander all over the sky. So if you're thinking, okay, I'm going to follow the certain planet, the star, and then you realize, wait a minute, last week it was here, this week it's over here, and now I can't trust its direction. And so the idea is that they are unreliable, untrustworthy, and misleading symbols of direction. And so when we're talking about false teachers, they're unreliable, untrustworthy, and misleading. We look for clear direction, and all we get is misdirection. Yesterday I saw a debate between two preachers, and in a very recent one, and over something that was preached in June of this year. And one preacher was very clear and specific. He spelled out the problems that he had with what this one guy was preaching, laid it out, spelled it out, and explained exactly what he thought was wrong with it, and what he thought was the right thing to be teaching. The guy who he was bringing these challenges to, he allowed him to respond to it, and he comes along and he says, well, I don't say that. That's not what I taught. That's not what I said. And then he said it. In the middle of saying, that's not what I'm saying, he said it. It's like he was unclear and giving misdirection. And so when I read it, I was like, okay, I've got two options here. Either this guy just doesn't understand that he's not being coherent, which means he's not very smart, or he's just deliberately being misleading. Either way, that's what false teachers do. They give unclear messages and mislead people. And so these things are all physical illustrations of a spiritual reality relating to false teachers and the problems of following them. But as I said earlier in the introduction, they all come under one primary problem. They all circle around one thing, and that is they are living according to the world. Go back to 2 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 20. In verse 20, Peter says this, for if after they have escaped the defilements of the world, and that's that phrase of the world that I want us to focus on here. The problem with it is that it is stuck in a this world thinking. False teaching is, in 1 John it talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. False teachers are pursuing those things. That's what they're going after. And they're trying to persuade brethren and people to follow them by offering those same kinds of things. And that's why Peter, Ecclesiastes calls it a under-the-sun thinking. And that takes us to Ecclesiastes. I want to go to Ecclesiastes for wrap up our lesson this evening, just to talk about some problems with under-the-sun thinking. Well, under-the-sun thinking, what does that mean? Under-the-sun thinking is faithless living for this world only. It's looking at the things of this world, the stuff of this world, and setting our sight on this and never looking above the sun into eternity. That's what he's talking about there. That's what he's warning us about in the book of Ecclesiastes. Under the sun, depending on which reference book you use, is used about 28 to 30 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. So the whole theme or the idea there is, here's the problem with living for this world. And that's what false teachers do. That's why I called it fishing in a parking lot. They're looking for things in this world where you will never be satisfied. You will never achieve what you want. You'll never receive what you really need. You'll have to be satisfied with crumbs instead of the banquet of the Lord that God has prepared for us. I reference here faithless living for this world only. I point out 1 Corinthians 15, verse 32. Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 is talking about the resurrection. And there were people who were doubting the resurrection. And he was pointing out that if there is no resurrection, what we need to do then basically is to simply eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. So just live it up, Because when you die, you're like Rover, you're dead all over. And that's a futile way of looking or living. Well, the first thing we want to do in Ecclesiastes, go ahead and turn back there, and we're going to do some reading from the text. I want us to read from the text and see why this is a bad approach to life, why it's an empty approach to life. You go in and expecting all kinds of great things, and then you realize at the end, you've been fishing in the parking lot. You got nothing. The first thing that we want to notice here is that it's inherent futility of this world's living, of living for this world. Inherently, no matter what it is you do in life, and I liked Dennis's article, that's why I went ahead and included it in today's lesson, or today's bulletin, is because it kind of touches on this. Thinking that you're too busy to die, well, you're not. You're looking at all of the things you got to do under the sun. It's all going to continue even after you're gone. So in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, let's read verses 2 through 11. I want us to look at the text and just think about it a little bit tonight. In verse 2 of first Ecclesiastes 1, he says, "Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again." By the way, anybody here read Ernest Hemingway's book, The Sun Also Rises? Anybody here ever read that? Okay, all right. All right, I read way too much. But it was Ernest Hemingway was a famous writer in the mid-1900s, and he wrote a book about some people who living a life that was just under the sun and was pointless and meaningless. And he gave the title, The Sun Also Rises, taking it straight out of Ecclesiastes, because he realized he was talking about the pointlessness of life. All right, but anyway, so he continues on. Verse 6, "Blowing toward the south, then turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, 'See this, it's new'? Already it has existed for ages. There is no remembrance of earlier things, and also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still." So when he talks about the inherent futility of life under the sun, it's like watching the Weather Channel, and guess what? The sun's going to come up, and it's going to go down. And then it's going to come back up again. And then it's going to go back down again. And then the winds are going to come from the north. Then they're going to circle around, and they're going to come from the south. And then they're going to come from the west, and then they'll come from the east. And around the wind goes. And it's going to rain, and then it's going to be dry, and then it's going to rain again, then it's going to dry. Over and over and over again, this continues. Everything, in a sense, is stuck on wash, rinse, and repeat. It's not even August. Not even August. And how many times already this month have we said, "Man, it's so hot. Oh, I can't believe how hot it is." Now, I did hear somebody talking about how cold it was yesterday at the pool, but we had a couple of cool days. But it was 90-something today. It's going to be in the mid-90s by Wednesday, so it's going to be hot again. By August, we're going to be dying because it's so hot. But then wait till December and January, and you'll be saying, "Can you believe how cold it is out there?" Ooh. Round and around we go. And that's okay that we talk about it, but that just illustrates the circular nature or the cyclical nature of life. It continues to go around and around. Every generation, by the way, talking about there, where he says there, is there anything new? There's no remembrance of earlier things and also the later things which will occur. This is verse 11. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. What they're saying is that every generation complains. Every young generation complains about those old people. Those old people, they're old, they don't know anything what they're doing, they're stuck in the past, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden we start doing that, and then all of a sudden we realize, well, they is us. We are the old people. And then we look at the young people and say, hey, these young people, they don't know nothing. They couldn't find their, they don't know their head from a hole in the ground. They don't know anything. I don't know how they can find their way out to the car in the morning to go to work. And then guess what? Those young people are saying, those old people like James, they're so stuck in the past. They don't know anything. They're using illustrations about living on a farm and going looking for a spring. Where did they come from? What rock did he crawl out from under? But guess what, guys? In a couple of decades, the young people, your kids, are going to be saying the same thing about you. Oh, Dad is so old. He flash drives. He thinks flash drives are the big thing. Flash drives, that's so, it's all Wi-Fi now. It's all digital. It all downloads straight out of the internet. You got it with you everywhere you go. That's the way of life. And so we have to be prepared for that. We have to understand that the direction and mentality of false teachers is to drag us into a lifestyle that's stuck in a circle, in a cyclical process that never ends. And so we need to make sure that we don't let them lead us there. And then but along with that comes the next one, and that is unresolved injustice. We look around at the world and we see things that are wrong, that are bad, that are not good, that need to be changed. And we think, all right, well, we're going to be the generation that everybody's been looking for. And we're going to come along and we're going to fix all these problems. We're going to solve all the issues. And guess what we do in solving all the issues? We just create more. We create more. That's one of the things that I was reading something the other day that I thought was pretty interesting. And the guy was saying, why is it, or he was basically saying, don't make the mistake of judging people by their intentions. People come along and say, I have good intentions. I want to fix things, and here's how I'm going to fix it. Judge them by the results of their solutions. And if their solutions stink and cause more problems, then reject the solutions. Commend them for the desire to fix stuff, but know that they're not going to fix it. But even if they do come up with stuff to fix things, despite our best efforts and greatest dreams, evil still happens and our hearts keep getting broken by it. Every generation will go through that. Back to Ecclesiastes, this time in chapter 1, in verses 13 through 18. Chapter 1, verses 13 through 18. And I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind. Because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. And what he's saying there is that no matter how much he knows and how much he learned, he realizes that people are still going to do things that are wrong. They're going to do things that are not smart. They're going to do things that they shouldn't do. And they're going to not do things that they should do. And problems are going to arise, and there's no way to stop or prevent it all. Try. And he's not saying don't try. But know that there was going to be futility and there's going to be frustration at the unresolved issues. The things that just don't get fixed, no matter how hard you try. Because people are people and they make mistakes. All of us do. And so he's saying here, your heart's going to be, and that's why the grief is, your heart's going to be broken by it. If you have a heart for God and you see people making mistakes that are going to ruin their life, your heart should be broken by it. When I read this debate, when I read this debate yesterday, my heart was broken by the fact that this guy doesn't understand what he's doing or he's being deceptive. It's heartbreaking because it's not necessary. But people are going to do things that we would prefer them not to do. And so we have to prepare for that. Now, what happens, though, is that when we get caught, when we get tired of all that futility and we get tired of fighting the injustice that will just never end, we end up just not forget about it and let's just live it up and have a good time. But that has its own problem. Inevitable boredom. There will be boredom no matter what we have in life. And that's in chapter 2. And this is in verses 1 through 11. Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 through 11. I said to myself, come now, and I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. Live it up. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks. And herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and treasure and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. So I did all of these things, and I didn't hold back anything, and I was happy about all of the things that I had accomplished. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. So he just got bored. The more you chase, the more you have, the more things you gather around yourself, eventually you're going to be bored with it. And you're going to want something new and something different. It's just the way life is because we're trying to fill a hole that things cannot fill. So it doesn't matter how big a home, how nice a car, how many nice outfits, expensive purses, pets, toys, etc. that we accumulate. Inevitably, we will get bored and exhausted with trying to fill ourselves up with things that do not satisfy. We're fishing in a parking lot. And eventually, we get tired of that. We'll go to the last thing that we want to look at tonight, and that is the great equalizer, death. We'll either start dreading it and try to fight it off, or we'll just welcome it and want to get it over with. Just wish it would come. It doesn't matter if we're rich or poor, good or bad, wise or foolish, death gets us all in the end. Look in chapter 2 in verses 12 through 17. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly, for what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly, as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. So there you stop there, and he's like, hey, it's better to be wise than foolish. Keep reading. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So, a hated life for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after men. Counting on fulfillment and meaning from the things of this life, counting on our education, on our wisdom, on all of these things to bring us satisfaction and make us valuable and important, ends up being futility and vanity. If that is as high as you take it, if it's all just for here and our life is just for here and we think that all the things that we can do here will bring us importance and value and meaning in life and that's all we're looking for, we're going to run up against that wall. And that wall is, this is not worth it. Why am I wasting my time with this? And so that's why we need to stop fishing in a parking lot. Anchor yourself in heaven. Look in chapter 3. So the writer is just heavy, 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 negative, negative, negative. But then he throws out some light here that lifts us up. And in verse 11 he says, He has made everything appropriate in His time. So God's made everything fitting for us. He has also set eternity in their heart. Yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. So He set an eternal yearning in our heart. And that's the hole that can't be filled up with stuff. It's a hole that has to be filled with God, and that's the only thing that will give us meaning and purpose and value and make all of the things that we accomplish here on earth worth something and of value. Verse 12, he says, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. So he says, that's a good thing. Go ahead and do these things. Live a good life on this earth. Do a lot of these things. Be accomplished in life. But see this, because, moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor, it is the gift of God. So this is something God has given us to enjoy. But then verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. And there is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take from it, for God has so worked that men should fear Him. And so that's what God is ultimately calling for, is for us to seek Him. Anchor your boat in heaven, because that's where you'll be satisfied. That's where you'll receive the things that you need and you really want. That's where you'll have ultimate meaning and purpose in life. So he's not saying don't do anything on earth, just live a bum life. No, he's saying be accomplished, be drawn to the things that you are, follow the things that you're drawn to, seek to improve yourself, seek to achieve, do that. And be satisfied in it. Be satisfied with whatever job you have and with the work that you do and with the things that you accomplish in life. Remember they're from God. And that's the key. Remember they're from God and look above this earth to Him to give those things purpose and meaning and to give your life purpose and meaning. And so there in verse 14, he says, I know that everything God does will remain forever. And the most important thing that God does is do an eternal transformation in your heart. That's why we have the services. That's why we study from God's Word. That's why we spend all our time here focusing on what God has to say, is that we want to let Him do an eternal transformation, that work that will last forever. The one thing that will last forever is our heart being turned into the image of Christ. That's what gives us meaning. And that's why false teachers are such a threat, and that's why Peter took so much time and Jude took so much time warning against them, because they will rob us of our eternal relationship with God. So do not let them do that. Don't let the world and don't let brethren that are teaching false things get your eyes off of God and focused on the flesh in the parking lot, because there ain't no fish there. Not a one. Well, that's our lesson for this evening, and we'll just end with this simple question. Will you let God work an eternal transformation in your heart? God will do it. His Word is powerful and living, And he has said, come to him, and you will receive this transformation. You'll be changed into the image of Christ. If we can help you be right with God in whatever it is you need to do tonight, please come while we stand and while we sing.